on this 27th day of June, 2011, in San Diego. We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized. Text number 60. Yatato yapi kaunteya purushasya vipashtitaha indriyani pramatini hadanti prasabhangmanaha. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. Purport. There are many learned sages, philosophers, and transcendentalists who try to conquer the senses. But in spite of their endeavors, even the greatest of them sometimes fall victim to material sense enjoyment due to the agitated mind. Even Vishvamitra, a great sage and perfect yogi, was misled by Menaka into sex enjoyment, although the yogi was endeavoring for sense control with severe types of penance and yoga practice. And, of course, there are so many similar instances in the history of the world. Therefore, it is very difficult to control the mind and senses without being fully Krishna conscious. Without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot cease such material engagements. A practical example is given by Sri Yamuna Acharya, a great saint and devotee, who says, Yadavadi mama cheta Krishna pada aravinde. Since my mind has been engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and I have been enjoying an ever new transcendental humor, whenever I think of sex life with a woman, my face at once turns from it, and I spit at the thought. Krishna consciousness is such a transcendentally nice thing that automatically material enjoyment becomes distasteful. It is as if a hungry man had satisfied his hunger by a sufficient quantity of nutritious eatables. Maharaj Ambarish also conquered a great yogi, Durvasa Muni, simply because his mind was engaged in Krishna consciousness. Savai mana Krishna madara vandayor vachangsi vaikunta kunanu varnane. Om Gyana Tamarandasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, this is a very sobering statement from Krishna that when he says all, he means all. So many of these verses have the word all or its equivalent in them. If you go back to the beginning of the series, text 55, Prajadiya Kaman Sarvam Partham, all the desires in the mind have to be given up. 56 doesn't have it, but Yak Sarvatra in the Bisneha, Sarvatra means everywhere. Sarvasha, all the senses have to be withdrawn. And in so if they're not all involved, if all the senses are not under control by the process of Krishna consciousness, that even one of them can take away the mind. And even of a man of intelligence or a person of intelligence, vipashchitaha means one who discriminates. So knowing about this is not enough. The knowledge can, the higher intelligence can be overwhelmed by the senses if we allow it to. That's why in the 13th chapter, when Krishna talks about knowledge, there's so much of that which has to do with activity and inner attitude. Let's turn to chapter 13, text 8 through 11, and we'll find Krishna's answer to Arjuna, what is knowledge? And we'll see that knowledge isn't just knowing the facts. 13.8. We don't have to go through the Sanskrit. But look at all of these elements of real knowledge. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even mindedness in pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. So much of that has to do with activity, especially unalloyed devotion unto me. So if we know the Bhagavad Gita, we know what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, we still may not be able to summon the spiritual strength to follow these instructions. So therefore, the relationship between the aspiring transcendentalist and the spiritual master is all important. There needs to be that personal touch so that one feels the personal responsibility to make an effort to do these things. It's not enough just to read the book. There has to be that personal contact. Now, a rare soul can read these verses once and be completely inspired to follow the process, control the senses. But that simply means that a lot of work was done in previous lifetimes. You know, we don't just come to this cold and really be able to follow it. Because so much of what Krishna is saying here goes 180 degrees against our conditioning. It means that our habits, our way of life is being challenged here. As soon as he says, Pratyahati yada karma sarvan parta manogatan, meaning one has to give up all these desires that arise from the mind, one is lost, practically speaking. That's how one lives from moment to moment in the conditioned state. So it's very radical. Even right here in the second chapter, we're seeing a very severe prescription if we want to practice this devotional service. Now, the example is given here. Now, Yamunacharya, I believe, had been a king. Isn't that correct? I think he was also...
coming in line with Ramanujacharya.
Yeah. What is that?
He's coming in line from Ramanujacharya.
Yeah, but he was... But he was a king. So the kings have all facility for sense gratification. That's what it means to be a king. You have so much of a retinue, you have so much money at your disposal. People follow everything you do. And yet he's such a great devotee that he's giving this revelation of his realization of how he really feels. Because, as he says, Yadavadi Mamacheta Krishna Pada Aravinde Navanavana Sadhaman Yuditam Rantamasi. That's the first prescription. Is that his mind is saturated with prema rasa, with the pleasure that comes from being fully Krishna conscious and serving Krishna. So Navanava means ever new. There's no question of boredom or depression or let's try something else. This Krishna consciousness is ever fresh because Krishna is ever fresh. And therefore, he's not feeling the urge to engage in sense gratification. And he mentions that it's nothing against women as a class, but the very essence of sense gratification in this world, he finds distasteful. He finds it distasteful in this state. So what an advanced stage that is. But we should know that this is actually natural. This is natural for the soul. Because sex attraction or any other kind of sense gratification really involves the activity of these senses, the gross senses, or the subtle mind in relation to the modes of nature. And all of that is a simple reflection of the reality. We were reading the other day, I forget because I've been traveling a long way, gave classes in Las Vegas and Flagstaff, Arizona in the last couple of days. No, it was Flagstaff. I think I read this section from the fourth canto, the teachings of Sanat Kumara to Maharaj Prithu. And he talks there about how consciousness is originally clear consciousness, prasanna, full of joy, full of happiness, Krishna consciousness. But when we turn away from Krishna, consciousness becomes adulterated by the modes of nature. Now, in one sense, it doesn't intrinsically become adulterated because it can be purified. Just like water, when it falls from the clouds, assuming that it doesn't pick up all of the mess in the air, pure water. But it mixes with mud and other things. Now, we know that water can be distilled. So in essence, the water is not becoming contaminated, but it's so mixed in that it seems to be such. Similarly, we're so mixed up with this body and everything that we seem to have been mixed with it. But Krishna is very clear in the 13th chapter. I just reviewed those verses. Forget, what is it? How the ether, although it goes everywhere. Yata saukshna lipyate. Right, so the ether is even subtler than the air. It's everywhere. But it doesn't mix with anything. It doesn't actually mix with anything. Similarly, the soul in the body doesn't really mix with the body. The problem is that the soul, being consciousness, we're thoroughly convinced that we're the body. But it's an illusion. It's a total illusion. And that illusion becomes very obvious when we die and we leave the body. The body's on wherever it is, on the bed or on the floor. It gets burned and buried. But we go on. We as conscious beings. So we never really mixed, but we self-identified, we misidentified ourselves with this body. This is the basic problem. And if we identify ourselves with the body, then we identify our self-interest with the interest of the body. And the body is built in such a way that it demands this, demands that, the senses demand this, the mind demands this, throughout our entire lifetime. So it's not easy to conquer that, and that's why he's giving this warning that even one of the senses, if we let it get stuck, if you will, on its particular sense object, then the mind will follow. The mind will follow. Hadanti prasapang manaha. By force, great force, it will take the mind away. So that's why it is said that Krishna consciousness is like on the razor's edge. You have to be very vigilant so that your senses don't get reattracted by the objects of the senses. Even though you may know, again, the example of the addict is there. Someone is very intelligent, but if he gets himself addicted to a strong drug, then even though he knows this is bad, he can't stop himself. You know, he's got entangled. He needs an intervention. Someone has to take him away from the drug and, you know, give him a good tongue lashing and whatever. In other words, we also need an intervention. That intervention is coming from the spiritual master and is coming from all the sadhus and others who can give us the spiritual strength. And as I like to point out, the AA does the same thing. You know, they have that principle is there of association, calling on the higher power, you know, and getting the strength to give up something that you really know you should give up. But here we're trying to give up everything that is dragging our mind away from the lotus feet of Krishna. Now the process of devotional service is such that the senses can be dovetailed. They don't have to be repressed. They can't be repressed, really. So there is such a thing as sex life for Krishna. He says right in the third chapter. Seventh chapter. Dharma avarudha bhuteshu kamasmi vadatarshana. So dharma avarudha, that which is not against religious principles, kama, sex desire, I'm that. So if it's, you know, sex is there for getting good children, Krishna consciousness in the proper frame of mind with the authorization, the rules and regulations, that's okay. But as soon as you get into the, and it's, you know, it's very possible, get into the sex for pleasure, then your mind is becoming degraded, taken away from Krishna. So all these rules and regulations, the ashrams, everything is meant to help us, give us the strength to follow the path. And it becomes easier, as we see from Yamunacharya. At a certain point, there's no question. And I like to give the example ourselves, you know, myself. All right, I can remember, you know, when I used to like eating meat. When I was a kid, up to, I don't know, about 24, when I became a vegetarian, you know? I didn't think twice about it, you know? I wanted it, did it, right? You know? But then when I understood, you know, Krishna consciousness, and I got the higher taste from Krishna prasadam, it became abominable. Knowledge coupled with the experience of the higher taste is the formula. Knowledge alone won't do it. There has to be that higher taste. But knowledge is important. When there's temptations of us, you know, oh no, there's no way I could imagine eating meat. You know, even if it may taste good or whatever, it doesn't even cross the mind anymore. So that can be there for everything, provided that we have a steady flow of the taste of Krishna consciousness. Then these lower tastes can enter into our mind. And Krishna will explain that in the next verse. Again, the word sarva comes in. Tani sarvani sangamya, all of the senses. Any discussion on this particular verse? All these verses I find very significant. Very down to earth, you know.
This one comment, that Prabhupada is saying that it's very difficult to control the mind and senses without being fully Krishna conscious. So it reminds me of a verse by Rishabh, where he says, Priti Maya Avanmai Vasudeve, Namakyate Dehe Yoginata.
Right.
And the next verse is actually, next verse after that is kind of describing this using the word Vipashyatam. It's saying, Yadana Pashyatya Yatha Guneha Swarthe Pramatta Sahasa Vipashyat. Gata Smriti, he forgets, and again, Vindati Tatra Tapan, again he suffers.
Yeah, give us the translation.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. Even though one may be very learned and wise, which is the same thing as in this verse.
Exactly.
He is mad if he does not understand the endeavor for sense gratification is a useless waste of time. Being forgetful of his own interest, he tries to be happy in the material world, centering his interests around his home, which is based on sexual intercourse, and which brings him all kind of material miseries. In this way, one is no better than a Krishna anymore.
Right. So it's exactly the same thing. Rishabhdev gives all this good instruction, but he says that even though you're very intelligent, if you're directed towards sense gratification, and that's what we see. So much intelligence is being employed. You know, sometimes I think of like all of these, the Apple computer. They have these big brains, you know, these guys figuring out these little gadgets, you know, that capture the mind, capture the mind. But what is it being used for? It's such a tragic thing. Here's this guy, what's his name, Jobs? Steve Jobs, who, you know, met the devotees when he was in Stanford, you know?
He had prasadam,
he met the devotees. But his mind got in this whole thing. And then recently they tried to contact him. He doesn't want to talk anymore. He's too busy with the next... The poor guy's dying of cancer. You know, you can see he's dying of a liver transplant or whatever it was. And still his mind is completely on this. And he's employing other big brains, really smart guys, you know, who all day and night they're spending on this. What a misuse of this vipashyata, you know. So you have to understand the importance of sense gratification, of giving up sense gratification. You have to understand the goal that you're looking for and the process. And one of the things is that's really encouraging, when you look at the lives of our great saints, great scholars, you know, such as Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was Nimai Pandit. And he converted the greatest scholars of his day, Prakashananda Saraswati, Sarvabhauma. And they all became bhaktas. You know, they all actually saw that the culmination of their Veda, of their understanding, the Anta, if you will, was bhakti, making a bhakti Vedanta. The end of all knowledge is really bhakti. So don't be bewildered by, you know, people who can spin vast philosophies or whatever. They can be atheists. But they're completely under control of their senses and their mind unless they get the higher taste and follow the process like this. That's the messenger. All right, let's go on. Tani sarvani samyamya.
Tani sarvani samyamya.
Yukta asita matparaha.
Yukta asita matparaha.
Vashahi yasyendriyani.
Vashahi yasyendriyani.
Tasya prajna pratishtita. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Purport. That the highest conception of yoga perfection is Krishna consciousness is clearly explained in this verse. And unless one is Krishna conscious, it is not at all possible to control the senses. As cited above, the great sage Durvasa Muni picked a quarrel with Maharaj Ambarish, and Durvasa Muni unnecessarily became angry out of pride and therefore could not check his senses. On the other hand, the king, although not as powerful a yogi as the sage, but a devotee of the Lord, silently tolerated all the sage's injustices and thereby emerged victorious. The king was able to control his senses because of the following qualifications, as mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam 9:4-18-20. Savai mana krishna badara vindayo vachansi vaikunda gonana varnane karau hare mandira marjanadi shu shuting chakara chutasat katodaye mukunda lingalaya darshane drishautan britya katra sparshinga sangamam granam chatat para saroja saurabe shrimat tulasyava sanantarapite parang hare cheta padana sopane vishiro rishikesha padabi vandine kamam chadasi nutukama kamya Yatotama shloka janashraya ratihi. King Ambarish fixed his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, engaged his words in describing the abode of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the form of the Lord, his body in touching the body of the devotee, his nostrils in smelling the flavor of the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, his tongue in tasting the tulsi leaves offered to him, his legs in traveling to the holy place where his temple is situated, his head in offering obeisances unto the Lord, and his desires in fulfilling the desires of the Lord. And all these qualifications made him fit to become a Matpara devotee of the Lord. The word Matpara is most significant in this connection. How one can become Matpara is described in the life of Maharaj Ambarish. Matpara, that's in the verse we're discussing in the Gita. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan, a great scholar and acharya in the line of the Matpara, remarks, Man bhakti prabhavena sarvendriya vijaya purvika svatma drishti sulabheti bhavaha. The senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service to Krishna. Also, the example of fire is sometimes given. As a blazing fire burns everything within a room, Lord Vishnu, situated in the heart of the yogi, burns up all kinds of impurities. The Yoga Sutra also prescribes meditation on Vishnu, and not meditation on the void. The so-called yogis who meditate on something other than the Vishnu form simply waste their time in a vain search after some phantasmagoria. We have to be Krishna conscious, devoted to the personality of Godhead. This is the aim of the real yoga. So, a lot of good information here. Again, the word sarvani comes in. Tani, meaning referring to the senses. Those senses have to be, all of them have to be samyamya, meaning completely controlled. And this word asita, now you remember Arjuna's verse of questions? He asked, kim asita vajeta kim? Yeah, so how is he situated? Well, this is, the word asita is here, so he's situated in Krishna, this matparaha. Now matparaha is probably, gets into that word, in relationship with me, and seeing me as the ultimate goal. So really, the devotees, at every step in their day, in their activities, they're asking themselves, "Or, you know, is this for Krishna?" You know, of course, at a certain point, spontaneously, it's for Krishna. But we, as sadhakas, we can ask ourselves, "Am I doing this for Krishna? Am I doing it for sense gratification?" You see, and the wonderful thing is that as one who is fully immersed in the process of devotional service, there's a program at every moment of the day. You know, for being Krishna conscious. If nothing else, we can chant Hare Krishna. You know, and if you chant Hare Krishna throughout the day, then whatever you do will be Krishna conscious. You'll be inspired to do everything for Krishna. And at the same time, if you follow your duties in Krishna consciousness, you'll want to chant Hare Krishna. Because, you know, that'll make it easier. That'll make it more effective, what you're doing. So, Yukta asita matparaha vashehi yasyendriyani tasya pragyapatishtita. So again, he comes to this word, pragyapatishtita. So we're back to the intelligence, getting the steady intelligence, which is a prerequisite for advancing in devotional service. All of the senses, by the process of devotional service, defined Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakta Ruchate by Rupa Goswami as serving the master of the senses with the senses. Will mean that our intelligence becomes fixed in devotional service. So these are very practical instructions. The story of Ambarish, for those of you who may have forgotten or never read the ninth canto of Bhagavatam, very instructive. As Prabhupada points out, Maharaj Ambarish, he was a great king who was a great devotee. We find many of them in Bhagavatam. And here it describes how he was a great devotee. Everything he had, he linked up to Krishna, beginning with his mind. And then, serving the lotus feet of Krishna. He spoke only about, his words simply glorified the Lord of Vaikuntha, the qualities and so forth. With his hands, he cleaned the mandir, etc. Marjanadi Su, just like we sing every morning. There's so much to be done, you know, to maintain the mandir. So the king, he had probably built a beautiful temple, you know, having the facility for Krishna. And he himself would clean that temple, you know, and take menial service, just like King Prataparuja with Jagannath, in the Jagannath Yatra. His ears, he was always hearing Krishna Katha. With his eyes, he was seeing the form of the deity. With his body, he was embracing the devotees. He was feeling their body with his hands and enjoying their touch. He was smelling the lotus feet of the Lord. With his tongue, he was tasting prasadam and tulsi offered with the prasadam. He was walking to the temple with his feet. His head, he's bowing down. You see? And with his desires, he was fulfilling the desires of Krishna. In this way, he was serving Uttama Shloka, and all of his everything was covered. You see? So that's really the process of devotional service. To try to use every facility we have, our body, our minds, our word, our voice, our money, our senses, everything that we have at our disposal should be engaged in Krishna service. And we'll find ourselves very blissful. We'll find ourselves peaceful. But if we try to use it for those things for our own gratification, you'll never be peaceful. Because this lust, you know, burns like fire and is never satisfied. That's the idea. So the pastime was that Ambarish was a great devotee, but after all, he was a Kshatriya. Durvasa was a great yogi, actually being an expansion of Shiva, but he was also very proud and prone to anger. And he envied Ambarish. Why should this Ambarish get so much honor when I'm a yogi and a Brahmin and I now have all these cities? You see? So he figured out a plan to embarrass Ambarish and force him to make an offense. So the plan was this, as I was explaining to our friend Bhishma Dev on our long ride back from Las Vegas. We weren't gambling. We just kind of went to the center there. So Ambarish was a very strict practitioner of Ekadashi, Vrata. And as we know, Ekadashi Vrata needs to be broken at a certain interval on the Dvadashi day. And you would get the full benefits and like that. So Durvasa decided he would approach Maharaj Ambarish's palace just before the time when you're supposed to break Ekadashi. And he came there at that time, and of course, he was being a great Brahmin, and Ambarish being a Kshatriya, Ambarish offered him all deference, offered obeisances, and invited him to dine with him in a little while to break the Ekadashi. All proper. So Durvasa very graciously accepted. And then he went to take his bath, which is another proper thing to do before taking prasadam. The only problem was Durvasa's purpose was to specifically extend that bath into the time, or past the time, when you have to break the fast. And a very strict etiquette rule in the Vedic culture is that if you have a guest who comes unbidden or any guest, you can't take prasadam before they do. You know, the idea is you feed them and, you know, take it during or even after. So this was a dilemma. So the time was expiring when Ambarish had to break the fast, but Durvasa was purposely not coming out of the river, you know, to take prasadam. So now what to do? Either Ambarish will take prasadam and break the fast and thereby not offend Hari and get the full benefit of Ekadashi, but offend his guest. Or he would not take prasadam and then offend the Lord and by waiting, you know, expiring them. So he consulted his Brahmin advisors. They all had, they didn't know what to do. So he said, "I have an idea. I'll just drink water. Water is breaking fast, not breaking fast. So I'll break the fast during the right time and therefore not offend Lord Hari. And I'll not actually eat anything and therefore not offend Durvasa." So this was his plan. Very, very logical. But Durvasa, when he came out, by his mystic power, he could tell that he drank water. And he saw this as a great offense. This was, you know, he planned it out. So what did he do? He overreacted. You know, he went nuts. He created a Kritya, which is a big female fiery demoness, to annihilate, to incinerate Ambarish. You can imagine. Yeah, he pulled the hair out of the head. And he had that power, he had mystic powers. So now here's this fiery demon is coming toward Ambarish. And we can imagine if all of a sudden this fiery demon has came through the door here, we'd go running out the room. But he was peaceful. He was completely fixed because of Sabhaimana Krishna Badana India. So he simply waited, just like Prahlad was completely tolerant. Tolerant, is it? And, you know, I just can't help thinking of the painting, you know. There's a painting there. So what did Vishnu do? You know, he manifested the chakra, disc, annihilated the kritya, and then went after Durvasa. Now, here was the perfect contrast. He was going to burn him up or, you know, kill him, which is actually very auspicious. If you get killed by Krishna's chakra, you get, you know, benefits, like getting liberation, right? But no, he was totally scared. And he started running. And running means he's running to higher planets, because it has this mystery. So he goes to Brahma, he goes to Shiva. They say, well, we can't help you. You know, that's Krishna's chakra. He's too powerful. So he goes, go all the way up to Vaikuntha. And there's Narayan, and he falls down and says, please withdraw your chakra. And Narayan says, I'm not even independent. I can't do it. I'm under the control of my devotees. And then that famous verse, let's see if I can remember. Sadhavo vidyam mayam sadhunam vidyam toham. Manan yat te na jananti naham tegyo managapi. So he says, sadhavo, the sadhus, the devotees are in my heart and I am in their hearts. I don't know anything but them and they don't know anything but me. And then the next verse, I think, is that I'm not independent. I'm under the control. What is that? Paradino. Naham paradino. So anyway, the prescription was you have to go back down to Ambarish and surrender to him. And he alone can provide you safety. So he did that, and he offers obeisances. And Ambarish, who wasn't even offended, you know, being threatened, he wasn't offended, and he prayed beautiful prayers to the chakra. And the chakra, you know, personified, of course, relieves the pain of Durvasa. So this is another instance of the comparative power of the pure devotee versus the great yogis. Ultimately, the great yogis, the great devotees are more powerful because they have Krishna on their side. And he is Yogeshwareshwareshwara. You know, he's the Lord of the Lord of all the great yogis. So he, if he is giving you power, no one can defeat you. So that's a very great a lesson. And the idea here is that we cannot be defeated by the senses if we are always linked up with Krishna. And ultimately, the pleasure is so great that it doesn't, that the consideration doesn't even enter into the mind, like Yamunacharya. But to get to that point requires discipline and effort and determination and all the things that we have to do. Okay, any other questions? Now he's going to go back. You know, these verses are all important. And here's now the path of degradation. Right. Yes? Yeah.
So if Maharaj Ambarish wasn't offended, then why did the chakra try to kill the...
Because Krishna was offended. Krishna was angry because his great devotee was threatened. Just like Prahlad. Prahlad, you know, forgave his father immediately. But Nrisingadev didn't until Prahlad asked for that boon. That's the beauty of the devotees. They're so tolerant that they can't, that the pure devotees don't even ever feel offended. But Krishna feels that pain, and so do all the other devotees, you see. And therefore he acts. That's the idea.
I think, I don't know if you read it somewhere, somebody told me that when you make an offense to a Vaishnava, it's considered greater depending upon how less that devotee reacted. The more the devotee tolerated it, the greater is the offense. If the devotee was offended, reacted, then that offense becomes a little smaller because he reacted. But if he did not react at all, that means he was completely pure and completely tolerant, then that much how bigger the offense becomes actually.
Yes, I never heard it put that way. But basically, you're just telling, you know, that it's a greater offense the greater the devotee is. But by the same token, all the devotees are great. You know, we shouldn't offend anyone.
Yes.
Because it's very dangerous like that. All right, let's go on. We can read these two verses actually go together, but we'll go to 62 first. Dhyayato vishayan pungsa sangaste shupajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho vijayate. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. Purport. One who is not Krishna conscious is subjected to material desires while contemplating the objects of the senses. The senses require real engagements, and if they are not engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, they will certainly seek engagement in the service of materialism. In the material world, everyone, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, to say nothing of other demigods in the heavenly planets, is subjected to the influence of sense objects. And the only method to get out of this puzzle of material existence is to become Krishna conscious. Lord Shiva was deep in meditation, but when Parvati agitated him for sense pleasure, he agreed to the proposal, and as a result, Kartikeya was born. When Haridas Thakur was a young devotee of the Lord, he was similarly allured by the incarnation of Maya Devi. But Haridas easily passed the test because of his unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna. As illustrated in the above-mentioned verse of Sri Yamunacharya, a sincere devotee of the Lord shuns all material sense enjoyment due to his higher taste for spiritual enjoyment in the association of the Lord. That is the secret of success. One who is not, therefore, in Krishna consciousness, however powerful he may be in controlling the senses by artificial repression, is sure ultimately to fail, for the slightest thought of sense pleasure will agitate him to gratify his senses. Yat pada pankaja palasya vilasa bhaktya karmashayam gratitam udgutayanti santa. This is a verse by Sanat Kumar, again in Tomorrow's Preetu, where he says, that those who are enjoying the vilas, the spiritual pleasure of serving the toes of the lotus feet of Krishna, they can easily cut the knots in the heart. In other words, the desires don't bother them. But others, as Prabhupada mentions here, tadvan narikta matayo yati yopi rudha srodoganastabananam vajavasudevam, that even though striving, yatato, hard, those who are not devotees, eventually the waves of material desire overwhelm them. Therefore, he says, Vajavasudevam, worship Krishna. He's saying to another great king, King Preetam. So here we see what happens when we contemplate the object of the senses, then Sangha develops. Now this Sangha has two meanings, or two halves of one meaning, say, and that is association and attachment. By association with things that are naturally pleasurable, one gets attached to them, naturally. And that's why this famous line, Sangat Sanjayate Kama, that your desires develop according to your association. If you never see or hear, you know, out of sight, out of mind type of thing, then you're not going to develop the attachment. The advertisers know that. They try to put things in front of your face, in front of your ears and eyes, that will attach, you become attached. Even in a matter of seconds, they're very skilled with that, you know, to plant that desire seed. Remember we talked about how this, by the grace of Krishna and Guru, you get the seed of the bhakti lata, right? So of the creeper of devotion. So there are so many other seeds being planted at every moment. But if we don't water them by contemplating the objects and striving to attain that sense object, but rather hear and chant about Krishna, then the all-attractive nature of Krishna will enchant our mind, and sense gratification will become less and less troubling to us. So this is very instructive. This verse goes with the next verse, that there's a progression. There's a progression. You contemplate the objects, vishayan. A sangha develops, attachment. From attachment, it gets stronger, it becomes lust, which is cannot be satisfied. Ultimately, it just expands unlimitedly. And therefore, you become angry. You become disappointed and angry. And that anger, as we'll learn, is very bewildering. That's why people, you know, who they have this thing called manslaughter. If suddenly you become enraged because somebody stole your girlfriend and you kill someone, oh, what did I do? I shouldn't have done it. You know, it's not premeditated in the quiet, you know, recesses of your mind. You didn't figure it all out. It happened by sudden. That's this krodha, anger overwhelming your intelligence. You know, so there's a, it's still bad, but it's not as bad as premeditation. So there's a progression here, and we have to try to stop it. Now, in the bud, by meditating not on vishayan, but by meditating on Krishna, who's really ultimately more attractive than any object of the senses. So again, Prabhupada gives a couple of examples here. Shiva wasn't able to control ultimately, you know, in several instances here, and Mohini Murti also, but Haridas Thakur was, you know. Haridas Thakur chanted constantly, and he was tempted twice, once by the prostitute and once by Maya Devi. herself. Prabhupada mentions the second instance. And in each time, he passed the test easily. It didn't even enter his mind. His mind was filled with Krishna. And we have to remember, you know, the very name Krishna means all attractive. The form, the qualities, you know, the fragrance, the personality, the pastimes, everything about Krishna is all attractive. And when the soul is in contact, that's what Sangat Sanjayate Kama has another meaning. That in association with Krishna, then our desires will develop for devotional service, for pleasing Him. This is why we're here, because we're contacting Krishna in the form of His name. And all of us can experience, if you have a good session of japa and you feel really absorbed in the holy name or ecstatic kirtan, there's no question of sense gratification. In the middle of that kirtan, it's not that all of a sudden your mind is going to, if it's really a rocking kirtan, right? You get absorbed. That's the whole idea, the yuga dharma. You know? And enough of that, and it becomes possible to give up these lower things, you know, that we can go on from day to day and practice devotional service. So, but on the other hand, if you're not chanting, if you're not practicing, if you're sure to meditate, you know, dhyayato on the objects of the senses, something or other, and that will take away your mind, and you'll find yourself in the modes. You know, it's as simple as that. So the secret of success is to get the higher taste, as Prabhupada refers to the Yamunacharya verse, so that kama cannot take hold of our mind, which will be explained in graphically in the next chapter at the end. How if that's saturating your senses and your mind, your intelligence, then you're in the control of the enemy. That's your enemy of the soul, that material desire. So we're living with the enemy right now. But we have the stronger force of Krishna and Krishna consciousness that can help us, if we allow him to, if we actually allow Krishna to take over our mind. Okay, we can do the next one, which goes with the previous verse. Krodhat bhavati sammoha. Sammohat smriti vibhramaha. Smriti brangshat buddhinasho. Buddhinashat pranashyati. From anger, which is the last element of the previous verse, right? From anger, complete delusion arises. And from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. And just before we go on with the purport, notice the last word, you know, pranashyati. Nashyati means destroyed. Pranashyati means completely destroyed. So one is in dire straits if he allows to progress to this stage. So let's read the purport. Srila Rupa Goswami has given us this direction. Prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastu naha mumukshubi parityago vairagyam pagukapchade. That's from the Bhakti Samana Sindhu 1258. By development of Krishna consciousness, one can know that everything has its use in the service of the Lord. Those who are without knowledge of Krishna consciousness artificially try to avoid material objects. And as a result, although they desire liberation from material bondage, they do not attain to the perfect stage of renunciation. Their so-called renunciation is called palgu, or less important. On the other hand, a person in Krishna consciousness knows how to use everything in the service of the Lord. Therefore, he does not become a victim of material consciousness. For example, for an impersonalist, the Lord or the Absolute, being impersonal, cannot eat. Whereas an impersonalist tries to avoid good eatables, a devotee knows that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and that he eats all that is offered to him in devotion. So, after offering good eatables to the Lord, the devotee takes the remnants called prasadam. Thus, everything becomes spiritualized and there is no danger of a downfall. The devotee takes prasadam in Krishna consciousness, whereas the non-devotee rejects it as material. The impersonalist, therefore, cannot enjoy life due to his artificial renunciation. And for this reason, a slight agitation of the mind pulls him down again into the pool of material existence. It is said that such a soul, even though rising up to the point of liberation, falls down again due to his not having support in devotional service. So, this principle of, you know, getting the higher taste, getting the support, this is this verse that's quoted here is part of like a two-verse explanation of Yukta Vairagya. It bears repeating again how vairagya, or dispassion, detachment, is a central principle of Lord Chaitanya's movement. Vairagya bidjanita bhakti yoga shikshartam ekha purushok purana. The ancient person Krishna appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach love for himself. Krishna appeared to teach love for himself, bhakti, in the form of Lord Chaitanya. And that bhakti is characterized by vairagya and vidya, knowledge and detachment. They go together. So the process that we are trying to attain is called yukta vairagya. Yukta vairagya means linking up those things that would normally attach, we would use for sense gratification, in the service of Krishna. The companion verse to this is anasaktasya vishayan yataraham apayunjita. Nirbandha Krishna sambande yuktam vairagya muchite. So that is the yukta vairagya principle. Without attachment, anasakta sivishyan, taking the object of the senses, such as food, and using it yata as appropriate in the service of the Lord, thus remaining detached from the object, but becoming attached to Krishna. Krishna sambande. You see? The idea is by taking those things that are normally be most attractive to us and offering them to Krishna, you can then take the remnants, you can use them as appropriate, but in Krishna consciousness, and you become attached to Krishna in the process, which is after all the final goal. So this is how to sublimate these desires. Now on the other hand, prapanchikatiyabhagya means, you see, having the mentality that everything in this world is material. You see, prapancha means mundane. Even sambandhi vastuna, even those things connected to Krishna, the deity, the holy name, the prasadam, you know, tulsi, everything that we revere is simply prapanchikatiya, is material. This is why they're called mayavadis. They see everything as maya. Mumukshubi, for the sake of liberation, they give up everything, all these things that are even in relation to Krishna. Parityago. But this vairagya is pogu, weak. Pogu also means weak, doesn't really have strength. And Prabhupada told the story of the Pogu River. There's this river in India. Like other rivers, during the rainy season it's full of water, but in the dry season it dries up. But below the surface there's still a little water flowing. If you stick your hand in there, it'll feel moist. You know. So it's the Pogu River. So he compares the hearts of the impersonalists to the Pogu River. And their vairagya is Pogu, as said here. So it means that, yes, it looks like they're dried up, you know, that they have no desire. But you go into a little bit into their hearts and there are all of these material desires waiting there. And they eventually come out and they overwhelm. The slightest little stimulus, you know, so many examples. Prabhupada always gives Vishvamitra, you know, who was this great yogi trying to become a Brahmin, right? And he's meditating, but then, as Prabhupada, is it this purport? Menaka comes by and you know, I think she was probably sent, right? Indra sends them. And the tinkling of the ankle bells was too much. You know, who is that? He opens his eyes and there's this beautiful woman in the middle of the forest. Shakuntala was born. You know, the point is that as opposed to Haridas Thakur, you know, Maya Devi herself came to try to allure him. Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. You know, no desire. So, and the other example, what does he give? Anyway, the impersonalists, you know, some of Saburi Muni was another great yogi meditating in the middle of the Yamuna, you know, for years on end. Why was he in the Yamuna? Underneath the water, so he wouldn't have to see contemplate the objects of the senses, So the fish copulating, you know, and couldn't control his mind. He didn't have Krishna Leela, the holy name, the association. All he had was his, you know, powerful grit and bear it, you know. Finished. Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't hard at all for Haridas Thakur. He was a pure devotee, and these yogis, they're really concentrating on pranayama to control their senses. But for us, we're not full, at least for myself, I'm not a full bhakta, not a yogi. So how do I control my senses? What mechanism do I use?
You have to pray. You have to call on the Lord with, you know, when the Maya Devi is alluring, you have to simply call on the Lord with one of those shlokas that you're remembering. In other words, this is a test. There's two kinds of tests. The tolerance is both sides, right? Matras Parsha Tukonde. Or just like we just read, Yaksavatra Anabisneha. Tatad Prabhasha Bhashabam Nabinantanadveshti. So it's both sides. One side is that someone is trying to insult you or whatever, or something bad happens, or you have some pain, you get diseased. These are bad things that happen, ashubham. And you have to be equipoised even then, and tolerate and go on with your duty. On the other side, these allurements come, and you have to tolerate. Well, how do you tolerate? Like Haridas Thakur. You have to call on the power of the name. You have to call on, you know, please save me. Just like I give this verse. How's it go? Yeah, manasijapani dushte labdabatos mi dushte timadagahana rupe hanta sangsara kupe ajatanika ladaksha heta muddara daksha mupanayam mama haste bhakti rajum namaste. So he's saying, if fallen in this deep and dark and dirty well of maya, threatened by the snake of lust, whose venom burns like fire, helplessly I plead, O Lord, whose strength is ne'er in doubt, place the rope of bhakti in my hands and pull me out. So that's, you know, that's like an expansion of the Hare Krishna mantra, you know. That's all we can really do. We have to, we can redouble our desperate call for the Lord. We really have to feel like that. And, if it's sincere, he'll give us the spiritual strength to overcome the difficulties. At this point in our life, the desires are still going to come. We're not like Yamunacharya. As soon as we think of sex life, you spit at the thought. It's not going to be like that. That's, you know, devoutly to be wished, but it's not happening yet. But we have so many things at our disposal. The association of devotees, the lotus feet of the spiritual master, you know, the Hare Krishna mantra. So many ways in which we can get the higher taste. Basically, it means fully absorbing the mind as far as possible in the attractive features of Krishna. Krishna is known Madana Mohan. That's what he does. He takes the mind away from sex life, some sex desire. That's what Madana Mohan means. There's these three levels of the deities, you know, or three kinds of deities in Vrindavan. Madana Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath. Madana Mohan, Radha Madana Mohan, they bewilder the sex god. You know, they track your mind. Govinda is the functional deity. That's the Abhideya, the practice of devotion. And Gopinath, you know, that's the highest levels of actually loving exchange. You see, that's prema. So Madana Mohan, pray to Madana Mohan to, help you overcome the difficulties. I'll give you so many shlokas. You know.
I had comment on the like. Okay. Yeah,
this word. Oh, time. Oh, I'm sorry. All right, we'll do it. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.